This week's parsha is Parsha Vayigash, which is, I think, perhaps the most emotional parsha in the whole Torah. And it's that emotional scene that I'd like to deal with today, although I will take out a lot of the emotional components to it and try to analyze it. It's the scene of the reconciliation between Yosef and his brothers. Last week's parsha, Parsha Nikes, the brothers come down, they don't recognize Yosef, he gives them a difficult time, he tries to bring them to tshuva. And the end of the parasha, he stages the fact that Binyamin stole the gaziah, his goblet, and the brothers all realize that they're in big trouble now, and they feel bad, and they're going to stick up for Binyamin. So here we see that now they're sticking up for one of the children of Rachel. And the parasha begins, Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda comes forward, and he says, I have to bring Binyamin back, if not, my father will not survive this tragedy. And he said, I'm willing to stay in his place as a servant instead of him. And it's very important to note that the Medrash tells us that because of this relationship, that Yehuda was willing to go in Binyamin's place in his stead as a servant and stay in Egypt and stay Binyamin back home, that this began a lifetime relationship between Binyamin and Yehuda, to the point that we see when the tribes are divided later in Jewish history, after the death of Shlomo HaMelech, so we have what's called the 10 tribes, the northern tribes, and the southern 2 tribes. So it's interesting that the first king of the 10 northern tribes was Yerovam from the tribe of Ephraim, which is one of Yosef's children, Ephraim and Manasseh. So you would think that Binyamin, of course, would go with the 10 tribes with Ephraim, it's his brother. But yet, if Binyamin stays with Yehuda, he's part of the 2 tribes, Binyamin and Yehuda. Why? The Medrash says because of the loyalty that he felt because Yehuda stood up for him. Wow. What a Medrash. That what somebody does for you will have such an effect. La'ola. It's forever. It's for eternity. That Binyamin's still around today as part of the 2 tribes. Yehuda really pleads. At that point, Yosef says, I can't take any longer. And the veil comes off. I am Yosef, the reconciliation. And we have the parsha continues with the way Yaakov comes down with the entire family and how they are set up in the land of Goshen and made comfortable in that place. I would like to focus in on the drama of the parsha. You can't but ignore it. It's right there in front of you. And to try to understand a medrash together today, a very famous medrash. Let's look at the source together of the verses. Source 1. Now Yosef could not restrain himself in the presence of all who stood before him. So he called out, remove everyone from before me. Thus no one remained with him when Yosef made himself known to his brothers. He cried in a loud voice, Egypt heard, and Pharaoh's household heard. Verse 3, and every time you read this, one's filled with emotion. And Yosef said to his brothers, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. Ha'od avi chai, is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him because they were left disconcerted before him. Ki nivhalu mipanav. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me if you please. And they came close and he said, I am Yosef, your brother. It is me whom you sold into Egypt. And now be not distressed nor reproach yourselves for having sold me here. For it was to be a provider that God sent me ahead of you. This is only 2 years of the hunger. We have 7 years left. On this concept of Ani Yosef, the Medrash says the following in Source 2. Woe to us for the day of judgment. Woe to us for the day of rebuke. Yosef was the youngest of his brothers, and yet they could not stand up to his rebuke. And his brothers were not able to answer him, for they are overwhelmed with shame before him. How much more shall we be abashed and confused when God himself comes and rebukes each one of us according to his nature? Very, very interesting medrash. It's this medrash I'd like to analyze together. The medrash says, in the words, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avi Chai, I am Yosef, is my father still alive? These were very carefully chosen words of rebuke leveled at the brothers. And says the Medrash, you know that this type of rebuke that Yosef gave to the brothers, and they could not respond, they were overwhelmed will be a similar rebuke that we will get in the future when God rebukes us, each one according to their nature. So the obvious question is, I must have missed something. Where's the rebuke? I am Yosef if my father's still alive. Did you hear rebuke there? If I were Yosef, I would say, you sold me into slavery. And you called me, you know, a dreamer. And now you see those dreams came to fruition. And now look, you've been bowing down to me. I mean, I would have had a good time. I am Yosef, if my father's still alive. And says the Medrash, these words of rebuke are a model for us on the way we will feel on the Day of Judgment. The question I'd like to ask is, what is this rebuke that's found in the words Ani Yosef? I'd like to take a look at three approaches, all, I will grant you, very similar, but each teach us a distinct lesson. And I think more importantly, or just as important, is what lesson can we learn for each approach so that we are prepared for the Day of Judgment knowing what's ahead of us. I had this happen to me just last week as part of the Milken luncheon, so they interviewed each one of the awardees with the Jewish Television Network. So the lady comes down and says, I'll be interviewing you and I'll be asking you 6 questions that I'll be taping. And this young gentleman will call you when it's your turn. So the young gentleman comes down and calls me, and in the elevator I said to him, is there any chance I can get to see the 6 questions before I get asked? That's a little bit unfair. Put you in front of a camera, here are 6 questions. He said, sure. I said, did any of the other ones ask for it? He said, one of the other ones asked. Can you imagine walking in and not knowing the questions in advance? That's pretty daring. I'm not that way in life. So I think it should be good that we should know what's coming ahead of us. At the Yom HaDin, the Yom HaTocha, at least we should know what is going to be the rebuke. At least we have plenty of time to prepare ourselves. So this is really a shiur for life, or more precisely, for afterlife. Before we look at these three approaches, I'd like to look at Yosef, in this story in particular, as a model of tochacha, a model of rebuke. And then I think we find within the parameters of this story how to give rebuke. Though I'll note that the Talmud states that today rare is the person who can give rebuke. It is so difficult. Even having stated that, let's take a look at rebuke in general, and then we'll enter into Ani Yosef, how these are words of rebuke. The mitzvah in the Torah, the command to offer someone reproof, is found in the 19th chapter of Vayikra, source number 4, verse 17. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall reprove your fellow and do not bear a sin because of him. And the next verse, 18, you shall not take revenge. You shall not bear a grudge against the members of your people, and you shall love your fellow as yourself. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. On this first verse, you shall reprove your fellow and do not bear a sin because of him. V'lo tisa alav chet. The many commentators are asked, what does it mean you shall not bear a sin? The famous approach is the approach of the Medrash, which Rashi quotes in source 5. Although you are required to reprove wrongdoers, you will be sinning if you do it the wrong way. Be careful not to embarrass them. And this is the source of not embarrassing people. So yes, you should reprove someone, but no, you should not reprove someone that they become embarrassed by the reproof. We clearly see that in the story of Yosef and the brothers. As the Orachaim HaKadosh points out in source 3 Aleph, Yosef makes sure to clear the room before he reveals himself to his brothers. Because as the Orachaim HaKadosh points out, that perhaps in order to prove to the brothers that he is indeed Yosef, he might have to mention, as he does, you sold me. I mean, that's something that's like a private secret that no one else knew. To say that in front of everyone else, that would be real embarrassment. Hotziu kol ish ma'alai, let everyone clear out of the room. What he's saying is, I'm making sure that your honor is upkept, and I'm making sure that no one will be around when I reveal myself to you. Prerequisite number 1 in rebuke is to ensure that the person does not become embarrassed. Prerequisite number 2 in the arena of rebuke, and this one is much harder, is that you cannot rebuke somebody because you are gaining personal pleasure or anything personal from the rebuke. And we see this from the context. you shall reprove your fellow, and then the next verse, not to take revenge, not to bear a grudge. You should not reprove somebody because you want to get at them. We so often have that, whether in a marriage relationship or in a friend relationship, whatever it may be, where a person may do something to you and you really want to get back at them. So what do you say? Oh, you think you're so great? Well, you know what would you do? And then you lace out them, you know, you do X, Y, and Z, you're not so great. That's not reproof. That's called revenge. That's called getting even. That's called many things. That's not called reproof. When you give reproof to someone, the end of the verse, you have to do it as you love your fellow like yourself. It has to be love of the person, not love of yourself. It has to be not because I feel good that I'm giving reproof and I'm getting a certain amount of pleasure out of this. That's not reproof. That's personal, whatever it may be. Reproof is that I want you as an individual to grow and to change. And my concern is for you. And we see this by Yosef HaTzadik as well in this story. There's a beautiful idea that's brought down in Sri Bet by Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov in Sefer HaParshios, where he says, when the verse says, Hotziu kol ish ma'alai, remove every individual from around me, on a deeper level, it's as if Yosef is speaking to himself, that he means to remove the ish ma'alai from himself. The ish is the aspect of lording over. That when he is about to say to his brothers, I am Yosef, and reveal himself, he cannot have any trace within himself of a feeling like, I'm getting even, I told you so. Any feeling of self in it. It has to be purely that I'm revealing myself for you to know that information, and not that I'm going to get any personal pleasure in watching you when you have this information presented before you. Hotziu kol ish ma'alai, he's removing the ish, himself, his ego, from this revelation. Concern for others, not for your own personal feelings. This aspect of Yosef showing concern for others and not himself is found in another part of our parasha, and it's a very powerful idea I'd just like to share for a moment. Later in the parasha, Yosef and Yaakov, his father, meet. The verse is found in the 46th chapter, verse 29, source 7 in our book. Yosef harnessed his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. He appeared before him, fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck excessively. Well, here we clearly see something redundant here. If he's going to fall on his neck and weep on his neck, clearly he's doing what? He's appearing before his father. Why do I need to know that he's appearing before his father? What's stranger yet is Rashi. Rashi in this section says, and he appeared to his father, and the subject of the verse is clearly Yosef. Yosef harnessed his chariot. He went to meet his father in Goshen. Clearly it's Yosef. Rashi says, Vayera elav, and he appeared to him. Yosef nira el aviv. Yosef appeared to his father. So the whole thing seems extra. Why do we need it in the verse? And what is Rashi telling me? And Yosef appeared to his father. Duh. He's the subject of the verse. Of course, he's appearing before his father. Why would I think it's otherwise? What is Rashi telling me? And he appeared before his father. Rashi, usually you explain something. So here, the Sichos Musar on the next page offers such a profound insight, and it's the idea we've been developing just right now. There were two thoughts going on in Yosef's mind when he's about to meet his father. 22 years being away from his father, the beloved son. Wow, I'll finally see my father. I've missed him for so many years. What an opportunity to see him again. Then there's the second thought. My father has missed me for 22 years. What an opportunity to show myself before my father. It's a slight difference, but it makes all the difference in the world. Are you going in order to satisfy your emotional needs to see your father? or are you going to satisfy your father's emotional needs to be seen by your father? When Rashi tells us, Vayera alav, and he appeared to him, Yosef appeared to his father, I know that. Oh, it's so much deeper. Yosef is going not for his personal benefit, but rather for his father's. To be seen by his father. That's Yosef. The ability to step out of self. And this is not easy. And this is really a key for life. That so many times when we do a favor for somebody else, are we doing the favor because we feel good in helping the other person? Or are we doing it because we want the other person to feel good? What is the driving force behind our action? And if we really analyze our actions accurately, I think so often we will see that that I plays such a crucial role. And when we're not going to feel good, so then we perhaps will not do that same action. If our focus is on the other, so even if it's a little difficult for me, I'd like to make the other person happy. That's prerequisite number two. Prerequisite number one is not to embarrass the person. Prerequisite number two is I'm going to reprove somebody, not for personal vengeance, not for personal gain, look how much greater I am than you, but rather I want you to improve because I'm concerned for you, for who you are. That's Yosef, the ability to step out of self and have concern for others. The third aspect of rebuke will bring us into the first aspect of what the Tochacha is. So this is a perfect bridge. And this is based on Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's essay, The Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind, in source number 11, where he explains what is rebuke all about. How do you do rebuke? And he says the following. In every English translation of the Bible, Hocheach Tochiach is translated as rebuke or reprimand. This is not an accurate translation. Hochacha does not mean rebuke and does not mean reprimand. It really means a proof. Something that serves as a raya for evidence is called a hochacha, a proof. Thus the Torah says, in fact, you shall prove to your fellow, to your chaver. Prove what? What shall you prove? Hocheach tochiach doesn't mean to reprove or reprimand. It means to prove something. So he explains the following, and it's a very, very insightful comment. He says that in the Talmud, we find that very often the Talmud will tell stories about individuals who do actions in their lives. And you'll note a difference in the way the Talmud tells over the story. He says, we find in the Talmud, in source 12, that whenever people are quoted as referring to the better side of their character, they speak of themselves in the first person. While if quoted as referring to the evil aspect of their character, then they refer to themselves in the third person. Thus, when the Talmud quotes people as saying that they fulfilled a certain mitzvah, it puts the words ana in the mouth of the person quoted. Ana, I did this, I did that. Should the Talmud quote people as telling that they were violators of the Shabbos or that they were rude, then the term hahu gavra, that person did it. Even though it's speaking about themselves, when it's positive, it's ana, it's I. When it's negative, it's ahu gavra. That person did it. We learn from this that within every individual, there are two personalities. There's the ideal personality, aspiring towards that which is sacred, noble, and worthy. And simultaneously, every person is moved by certain animal instincts which lead him or her to sinful acts. The real personality is the one that is motivated by lofty inclination. That is the ana, the I, the essential inner self of the person. The animal instincts that impel one to wrongful acts constitute only the ahu gavra, a stranger, a trespasser who occupies one's spirit. And that is what the mitzvah of Tocha is based on. It's based upon the belief that the true self is the eye of the person, not that person. The ahu gavra is only a subterfuge that covers up and imprisons the real self. And how can you correct somebody? Not by calling names, not by reprimanding, but by proving to the person his or her true self. If you focus in, and this is so true in any aspect of chinuch of education, it's not you did this wrong, you did that wrong, but this is what who you are. This is what you can accomplish. This is what's right. You focus in on the right, you focus in on the truth, So everything else will fall by the wayside. Instead of focusing in on the negative, focus in on the positive, which is really the essence of a person. We all know this in terms of child psychology, that it's what the person did that is negative. It's not the child themselves that are bad. You bad boy. Boy isn't bad. That which they have done is a negative thing. But their essence, they're a wonderful kid. You're going to develop a complex in a kid if you're going to call the kid bad. It's not the kid that's bad. The proof that he brings to this idea, which is very, very, very brilliant, is the story of Elisha ben Avuya. Many of us may be familiar with, perhaps some of us have read as a driven leaf. It's the story of Elisha ben Avuya, who was a great Talmud scholar, who went off the path. And when he went off the path, the rabbis referred to him as Acher, the other one, which is exactly what we're saying here. It's not him. He's really Elisha ben Avuya. Acher is someone else. Elisha ben Avuya, a.k.a. Acher, had a student, Rabbi Meir, who was very loyal to him to the last day. And Rabbi Meir always used to say to him, Acher, Rabbi, please do tshuva. So Elisha ben Avuya once said to Rabbi Meir the following. He says, I was riding on my horse, some people say it was Yom Kippur, and I passed the Kodesh Kedoshim and passed the Holy of Holies, and I heard a voice coming out of the Holy of Holies saying, Shuva, Shuva, return, return, chutz mi Acher, except for Acher. We're not accepting Acher's tshuva. So you see, I can't do tshuva. So Rav Aaron Soloveitchik explains that Elisha ben Avuya misunderstood the voice. What the voice was saying is, Acher can't do tshuva. Why? Because Acher is not the real personality of Elisha ben Avuya. Shuva, Shuva, chutz mi Acher. Everyone can do tshuva except for Acher, correct? Acher can't do tshuva because Acher is really not the essence of who Elisha ben Avuya is. Ah, Elisha ben Avuya as an individual could do tshuva. Tshuva is open to everybody, open to the essence of everyone, not open to the Acher, the part that really does not define who we are. And that's why in summation in 15, the reason so many Jews feel incapable of tshuva is because they are not aware of their own spiritual strength. They think that the Acher is the real person when actually it's only a trespasser. The Torah says if you want to succeed in correcting Jews who are delinquent in their demeanor, then do not try to reprimand them. Do not tell them you are no good, you are impure. That is not tochacha. Rather, tochacha requires that you convince the delinquents of their inner selves, and that's what it means, you shall retrieve your fellow. You bring out the positive aspect in the person. So I think on one level this is the third element in tochacha, not to embarrass the person, not to do it for personal pleasure or revenge, but rather for the person's own benefit. And the third aspect of tochacha has to be that you bring out the good in the person and not focus in on the negative. If you understand the positive aspects of a person, so then it's not fitting for such a person to do that which you have done. But I think this third idea forms for us the bridge of the first idea of our original question of what is the rebuke in Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, is my father still alive? It's an interesting concept, says Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov in source 16, of the relationship of Yosef and his brothers before he was sold. He explains that Yosef was somebody who kept his inner identity to himself, that it was really a private affair between him, God, and his father Yaakov, who knew his inner self. The brothers looked at Yosef as the Hahu Gavra, as that person, and not the Ana, not the inner self. They did not understand who Yosef was. The biggest proof of this, the Rav says, is when Yosef is going to see how his brothers are, and he's traveling along the way, and the brothers see him from afar, and they decide that they're going to kill him or throw him into a pit. So the verse says that they saw him mirachok, from afar, which literally means he was down the way, and they saw him coming. Ah, but it explains so much deeper the relationship of Yosef and his brothers. They looked at him only mirachok, from afar, as the Ahu Gavra, They didn't know him by his essence. And that, says Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov, explains how Yosef could get away with all those interactions and never giving himself up as their brother. You would think that even though they were separated for 22 years, and I don't care if he grew a beard and he changed his facial appearance, he's still his brother. Can you imagine that here they're having all these conversations and they never pick up on the fact, you know, if you live with someone for long enough, there's certain gestures, there's certain aspects, you know who they are. But it's much deeper than that. They never knew who he was. So even when they're meeting him in Egypt, they're not able to figure out who he is because they never really knew who he was. It's at this point, when Yosef is no longer able to hold himself back, says Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov, that he's not holding himself back means on the deepest level he is now revealing himself and all his glory to his brothers. Source 19. Vayomer Yosef Alacham, the bottom of the second page. Ani Yosef Ha'od Avi Chai. I am Yosef. Is my father still alive? And his brothers couldn't answer. Ki Nivhalu Mipanav. They were taken aback Mipanav from his face. Panim ka'elu od lo ra'ubo. They never really saw his face. V'halo p'nei Yosef hema ketzad lo ra'inu. How was it that we were so blind that we never saw you properly in the proper perspective? And that's the rebuke on me, Yosef. Me'az v'ad ata lo shaniti. I have not changed. The problem is that you have not opened yourselves up to wanting to know who I was. The first level of rebuke that's found in the words on Yosef is, here I am in my full glory, and you never bothered getting to know me. Had you really bothered getting to know me, and not just judging me so superficially, all of this would not have happened. What is the rebuke that we can learn for our lives as the final rebuke, as we said, that this story is just a paradigm for the way God is going to rebuke us in the future on the Day of Judgment? So the Shem Yishmuel on the top of the page, source 10, explains that God is going to do the same thing with us. He's going to reveal himself in his full glory and say, how come you've never bothered to get to know me? You've prayed to me every day. You've said blessings to me. You've celebrated Shabbos. You've communicated with me. Just like the brothers knew Yosef. But I have news for you. You never bothered really to know me well. Because says God in the future, if you really bothered to get to know me, then a lot of the thoughts that you had and a lot of the actions that you did and a lot of the behaviors would never have taken place. The Ani Yosef, the rebuke on this level, is you judged too quickly. You didn't bother to look deep enough. This is the rebuke, Lassi Lovo, says the Shem Yishmuel, where God's going to say, I was there the whole time. It was a question, are you open for this relationship or not? That's rebuke number one. Third page. Rebuke number two. And they're really, as I mentioned, all very similar, based on each other, but each one gets a little bit more deeper. This one is found in many places. The one we have in front of us is Reb Chaim Shulevitz Atzal and Sichos Musar. So we asked our question, I am Yosef, where is the Teucha, the rebuke that the Medrash refers to? I don't see rebuke here. So he says that this implies that the Teucha rebuke, in essence, is not the verbal castigation that we've come to see it. Rather, it's making a person aware of the fact that he has erred. When a person realizes that he has lived his life with a totally mistaken perspective, then the rebuke has accomplished its purpose. Thus, no greater tocha than Yosef can be imagined. The very act of selling Yosef into slavery became the stepping stone to Yosef's ascension to royalty. The very actions perpetrated in order to prevent the fulfillment of his dreams became the means for their realization. Yosef's simple declaration, I am Yosef, was absolute proof that he was not a Bala Chalamot, a grandiose dreamer, as they had accused him of being, but rather a prophet of God conveying the divine word. It was the shock of this rebuke in the face of their strong convictions that so overwhelmed the brothers and left them speechless. The brothers worked their whole lives based on the assumption that they had every right to do what they did to Yosef because he was a dreamer. And therefore, he was trying to take over the role of Malchus, the role of kingship, which belonged to Judah. He was trying to knock them out of the covenantal community. They believed that everything that they did was absolutely right. All their actions, selling him and lying to the father, everything they did, they all thought was right because their end goal was correct. When he said, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, and by saying I am Yosef, he's saying is that it was not... They believed that everything that they did was absolutely right. All their actions, selling him and lying to the father, everything they did, they all thought was right because their end goal was correct. When he said, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, and by saying I am Yosef, he's saying is that it was not I was a grandiose dreamer, but I was a Navi, I was a prophet from God. So therefore, all that you thought was correct was not correct. And if the end goal was not correct, I am not who you thought I was, so therefore all the actions that led up to that moment are also not correct. The other example, you know, when Esav comes in to get the blessing, so it's, and the Medrash tells us that Gehenna opened up in front of Esav. So the Pasuk says, the verse says, Vayecharan Yitzchak charada gdola, and Yitzchak trembled a great trembling. The Medrash says at that moment that Esav came in and Gehenna opened up beneath him, it was a greater trembling, charada gedola, than the trembling that Yitzchak had at the altar. Now that's pretty intense. About to have a knife by your father, about to kill you, and this is more intense? Yes. Why? Because he lived his whole life under an assumption of who his son is. And therefore his whole relationship with his son was years and years and years were built up on this. And then you see that what you thought was correct was not correct. It's like pulling the rug underneath of you. And what happens? The whole building collapses. That's the tokacha here. That's the rebuke. Ani Yosef, what you thought was the end goal, and therefore all the means were justified because of the end goal, is really not the correct end goal. And therefore everything that you've done is wrong. And this clearly is the rebuke that will be leveled against us in the future. 23. But it's not only because one had distorted perspective per se that one was so severely embarrassed in the world to come. It is also the fact that one behaved and acted based on his erroneous beliefs and viewpoint. When a person realizes that his perspective was wrong, it automatically means that the entire chain of his deeds and action was one continuous error. Therefore, our rabbis refer to the Day of Judgment as the day when Hashem will rebuke each and every person on account of his deeds. For when the very goals and idea upon which one bases his actions evaporates, then the deeds become mere, empty gestations. Thus, the Day of Rebuke is harder for the person than the Day of Judgment. Moreover, often a person will perform an act with the knowledge that something is wrong, but nevertheless feel the act is justified by its outcome, by the fact that it is but a means to a worthy goal. When that goal, however, is proven to be false or meaningless, then not only is the act without redeeming value, but it stands out in its fullest measures of evil. On this level, the way to prepare ourselves for this ultimate rebuke is to make sure that the actions that we do stand in their own right as proper, and not that we build everything we do on a goal. Because if we're going to justify everything for a goal, and perhaps that goal is not a correct goal, so that everything will fall apart around you. And you have that with kids who maybe aim for a certain honor or a certain whatever it may be. So they'll do this, and they'll do this, and they'll do this, and they'll do that, all to get this honor. And let's say they don't get the honor. So then they get very frustrated. Well, we've done all this to get the honor. So then why did I do everything? In life, you have to work on that each action is done because this is what I want to do. Not basing your whole life, you know, like a Lego block to reach this highest level. And if that never happens, or that end point is a wrong end point, so your entire structure will collapse around you. Ani Yosef, your goal was a wrong goal. And that's the biggest rebuke. Everything you've done, therefore, is wrong. Third level of Ani Yosef, and then we'll see one final idea preparing ourselves for the future. And this is a very famous concept. It's based on the Beis Halevi. Rabbi Miller brings it down in Shabbat Shirim, source number 26. It's explained in the work entitled Beis Halevi that actions for which the person we brought to account are of two types. There are actions in life which are clearly and demonstrably wrong. Such actions are subject to judgment, and the term Day of Judgment has reference to them. There are, however, many actions in life that man can justify on various grounds, on account of his lack of knowledge or lack of ability in the moral sense. One may claim that the circumstances were such as beyond one's power to overcome temptation, that one could not possibly have been victorious in the moral struggle. In such cases, the guilt of the person must be proven to him, and it's in this connection the term Day of Rebuke is used rather than Day of Judgment. What does this mean? It's a very famous story that's brought in the Tanna Dvei Eliyahu, that's brought down in Source 27, where a person is asked, why didn't you study Torah? And the person answers very simply, I wish I could have studied Torah, but God just didn't make me smart. So since I wasn't smart, I couldn't study. So this person is asked, what did you do for a living? I made fishing nets. Ah, you were smart enough to make fishing nets, but not smart enough to learn Torah? In a similar vein, end of 27, we often come across the rich man who spends a fortune on decorating his home in the most expensive and beautiful style. But when it comes to giving for charity, he has no money for that. The paradox becomes obvious on the Day of Rebuke. No further accusation is necessary. The facts speak for themselves. And that's why in continuing 28, so our sages say, then the heavenly court, each man judges himself. All his excuses and rationalizations melt away on that day of truth. And the facts, the deeds, and the words of his life speak eloquently and unmistakably. Therefore, woe to us for the day of judgment, woe to us for the day of rebuke, for the day when the discrepancies of our lives will appear glaringly before us and we will fall into abashed silence. We live a life of contradictions. How do we see this by Yosef? So the Beis Halevi explains, we see that not so much in Ani Yosef, but rather in the second part, Ha'od Avi Chai, is my father still alive? Seems like a strange question. Their whole argument was, he's going to die. So clearly he's alive. So why is he asking, Ha'od Avi Chai, is my father still alive? So explains the Beis Halevi in 29, this kind of implicit reproof was the aim of Joseph in his question to his brothers. Is my father still alive? When Judah pleaded to Joseph for the safe return of Benjamin to his aged and already bereaved father, Joseph's immediate answer was, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? I am that Joseph whom you snatched away from your father's bosom. Why did you not then show this concern for the sorrow of your father? Why is it only now that you have become aware of it? This was the reproach implied in his question. Joseph was not seeking an answer to his question, but intended to demonstrate to his brothers the inconsistency in their behavior. Now so suddenly you're interested in your father. Well, where were you 22 years ago, and where was your interest for your father then? Judah, with his own lips, had accused himself and his brothers had exposed the inconsistency in their behavior. The sorrow of their father at losing his beloved son Joseph had not entered the reckonings in the vengeance of the youth. It is this, the internal contradiction of our lives, the tension of appearance and reality, the lack of integrity and consistency, that induces shame. This is the prototype of the Day of Rebuke, when each man is judged according to his nature, entirely through the medium of his own deeds, his own life, from which there is no plea, no rationalization. Faced with the contradiction of his life, man will be his own judge. And this is very powerful. It's not that God is going to take an outside measuring stick and say, well, this is how you should have acted. It's far worse than that. Look at your own actions and you see the contradictions within your own life. You tell me that you don't have enough money to spend on Torah projects. Well, you certainly had enough money to spend on these aspects. You tell me you don't have enough time to devote to chesed, to community work. Well, you certainly had enough time to do this. You're telling me you don't have enough brains or talents. Well, you certainly had enough brains and talents to do that which you wanted to do. That inner contradiction in life, where we have these rationalizations, we have these claims, we don't have enough of this, we don't have enough of that, will all come out within our own lives, saying, hey, look at your own contradictions in your lives. And that's why Rabbi Miller concludes that the only way we can get out of this is in 31, the asterisk, the practical lesson to be derived from this is very obvious. In the confusion and flurry of life, rationalizations come very easily to our lips. There's scarcely any defect or neglect that cannot be accounted for and plausibly excused. So that even we ourselves are convinced and no longer troubled, either to lack of time, lack of money, or lack of talent. But on the day of truth, these flimsy excuses will disintegrate. They'll not be able to withstand the rebuke of our own lives or our own actions. An interest for which there was always sufficient talent, money, and time. Our own deeds, the paradoxes of our lives, will accuse us. And that ultimate shame can be avoided only if we attempt constantly and honestly to make our lives in this world a consistent and harmonious whole. What we need to do and be conscious of in our lives is look at the contradictions in our lives and try to work them through. When we say we don't have enough time, do we find time for other things? If so, then we need to take a hard look at ourselves. Better us to take a hard look at ourselves than the final Yom HaDin and having to do it at that point in time. Ani Yosef, you didn't know me well enough. The final rebuke, God says, you're not cognizant of me well enough. You didn't spend time knowing me and bringing me into your life. Ani Yosef, everything that you believed was the end result was justified. You were wrong, and therefore all of your actions are wrong. Make sure that the actions for the action's sake are correct and not only work for a final goal, because who knows if that goal will ever come to be or that's the proper goal. And the third level of Ani Yosef is the inconsistency. Now you're concerned, then you weren't concerned. Look at the inconsistencies in our lives and try to work them through. I'd like to conclude with one final understanding of the rebuke in the future. And in my mind, this is the most powerful rebuke that we can possibly be given. And that's why I'm including it here, because I think that this is something that we need to work on in our own lives. Brought down in Yalkut Lekach Tov, this will be the final idea for the morning, source 33. He says, B'derek Klal, generally, people think that they're doing okay in life. You go over to someone and say, do you feel like you're doing okay? Yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of things that I can work on, I can change, but per se, I'm on the right path. Yeah, I'm doing really well. So he says, what will be the great pacha, the great fear, where the arrow is, the kamang dolan tiya busha, what will be the great embarrassment when God comes and shows every person it's not what you thought. Instead of really being serving God, and ultimately you're serving yourself, your desires, and what you want. And if you think that you can excuse yourself and say, well, what do you want? This is the way you made me, God. I did the best I could. Here's the punchline. In the future world, the greatest rebuke will be that it will be revealed to you who you are. That's the rebuke of the future, where God is going to open up a scene, not of who He is and how come you didn't have a relationship with me, but who you are. And how come you didn't know how great you are, what your potential is? And that's what it means that God is going to rebuke every person according to their deeds. Klomar, last line in 33, Shekol echad yireh mahu be'emet. On that final day, you will see who you really are. Va'ad kama dolim kochot nafsho, and how great are the powers of yourself. How much is within us that we're not utilizing? That's the rebuke. And I think it's hinted at in the words Ani Yosef Ha'od Avi Chai. The Shem Shmuel in Source 35 and his Rosh Hashanah Drasha explains the name Yosef. And he says that we know that a name is the essence of a person. When Yosef was born, Hashem says, Rachel says, Yosef Hashem li ben acher, God should give me another child, an additional child. What does Yosef mean? Says the Shem Shmuel, Lashon Tosefet, a language of addition. Shayat Tamid b'chidush ha-chayim. He always wanted to grow and always wanted to increase who he was every day. It's a wonderful thing. Anyone knows Yosef? It's a wonderful mita to have this idea of Yosef. The essence of Yosef is the idea of constantly adding, constantly growing. Ani Yosef, I think, is really the call to us, not so much to the brothers. I am Yosef. I am somebody who is constantly growing. That's my essence. Yosef Hashem li ben acher. I want another child. Ha'od avi chai, is my father still alive? The aspect of avi here is the aspect of reproduction, of increase. Ha'od avi chai, is this aspect alive within you? Are you somebody constantly growing, somebody constantly trying to be motif, trying to go from step to step? And I think when we read the parsha, this, Ani Yosef, Ha'od avi chai, really we have to, on a certain level, move away from the brothers and turn to ourselves. And saying, I am Yosef, somebody who constantly works on myself. Are we doing the same? Are we able to say that I've tried to find out who I am? I've tried to meet my potential. I've tried to push myself further and further. Or are we going to get up to the final day and God's going to say, well, how did you do? I did great. That sense of complacency is going to be the biggest busha, the biggest rebuke that could ever be leveled. So let's just summarize what we saw today, and then we'll take questions. Three criteria, really, of rebuke: not to embarrass a person, to do it for the person's sake, not for your sake, to be focusing on the other's needs, not your needs, and rebuking to bring out the positive, not focusing in on the negative, to focus in on the ana, not the hu gavra. What is the rebuke in Ani Yosef? It doesn't seem to be rebuke. Level number one, Rabbi Eliyahu Kito, you didn't get to know me well enough. Rebuke for the future, you didn't get to know God well enough. Level number two, the Sichos Musar, you thought that the end justified the means. They did not do that. We need to be careful in each and every one of our actions that we're doing it for the proper reason and not that we have this ultimate goal and everything is justified for the ultimate goal. And finally, the third level, the Beis Halevi, is that the inner contradiction. You're so concerned now about your father, why weren't you so concerned beforehand about your father? And those will be the inner contradictions that God will show us in our own lives as well, when we say we don't have talent, money, time, and yet we find it for our own personal needs as well. And I think the strongest tochacha rebuke that we need to prepare ourselves for the future is the call of Ani Yosef Ha'od Avi Chai. That's really a call to us. Do we feel complacent and happy with who we are? Or do we realize there's a lot more in us that we constantly have to grow, we constantly have to move, we constantly have to develop ourselves, and we can never say, I've reached there, I've hit the summit, but always on the path of Yosef, on the path of